Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're going to be talking about the race, to increase the speed within which we're able to do payments in South Africa. I think a lot of people, welcome all the efforts that have come from the banking sector to just make sure that we are getting our payments done and concluded as quickly as possible. I think for the most part, gone are the days when one had to wait, a couple of business days to send money from one bank to another. But for today, we're looking at it within the world of, businesses making payments, either to, from consumers to businesses or businesses to businesses. And, all of that, under the rapid payments program, that has been a big thing for the banking sector for a couple of years, and in particular our friends at BankServe, which is an association, which is a unit that is owned by all the big four banks. PayShap is something that we've spoken about quite a bit, but for today we're talking about it within the context of businesses. So to help us to navigate today, we are joined by the team from Standard Bank, specifically their CIB or their corporate and investment banking. We have Ntabi Seng, Mohale, as well as Stuart McDermott, and we're just going to get into that conversation and some of the offerings that are happening from that point of view. Team, greetings to you today.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Majisa,
and to your audience. Thanks for
the
opportunity.
Cool. Ntabi, I'm just going to start with you, on this one. Maybe you could give us a little bit of insight, just so that we understand. Of course, we're talking about this. The universe of Standard Bank is large, the biggest banking group on the continent. But when it comes to what we're talking about right now, we're talking about businesses, we're talking about rapid payments, and we are talking specifically to, the corporate and investment bank. What's your interest when it comes to, this particular development of helping, businesses to settle payments as quickly as possible? What's your piece in that particular universe?
Okay, thank you so much. I think my interest is how are we then bringing innovation and how are we bringing efficiencies to our corporate clients in order for them to process payments to their beneficiary, and how easy it is for them to actually process those particular payments, and how confident would they be in trusting that the payments that they've done actually reach the beneficiaries that they want to. And it's actually instant. It's no longer you need to wait 2 days before the funds can actually clear in your bank account. They can confidently utilize this particular system to then process the payment. So my interest is that how do I make it easier for them? How do we then, from a Standard Bank perspective, deliver something that will actually create value for our clients, for them to want to utilize this particular rails that we're talking about?
Stuart?
Yeah, I think I share the same views. I think it also ties into the focus of the South African Reserve Bank in regard to this. It's really around how do we make our economy function more efficiently to enable financial transactions for a broader spectrum across the South African population. So this is around helping reduce cash, helping have a lower cost when making your transactions, helping with the currently, in our country, we've got a social grant system that results in everybody drawing cash at ATMs and retailers to use banknotes. We need to get away from that. That's old style. It's expensive. It's slow. And it's dangerous. These new payment rails offer a huge opportunity for the country to take a step forward and really, make ourselves more efficient and dynamic and enable opportunities.
Okay, so now that we understand, I guess, the world that you guys are coming from, maybe we can get into some of the nitty-gritties, right? When it comes to PayShap, a lot of people have now heard of the brand. It was started in March last year. We've been seeing BankServe just giving us an idea of the amounts of the transactions that are flowing through, you know, that particular platform. I think the last at last count, over 30 million transactions, you know, billions in terms of the value that's gone through, you know, that particular system. I think earlier in the year we heard, I think it must have been like over 9 billion, but by the latest set of numbers, it was over 20 billion. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on the platform. But that's what we understand from a consumer point of view, that we can send money very easily to each other. But for businesses specifically, you know, for people that may not fully understand, Stuart, I'll start with you on this one. What's the mechanism? Like, how does PayShop work for businesses?
So I think it's early days, and that's something we're just starting with, which is where our platform came from. PayShop for Individuals was launched a year ago. So those figures that you've seen are good adoption over a year. For corporates, we've just started the journey of enabling corporates both to receive payments and make payments. And we truly believe this is going to be a incrementally bigger driver of adoption in individual payments. I mean, just think, where do you spend your money? You buy goods from, whether it's a spaza shop, whether it's a retailer, whether it's insurance, whether it's any of your monthly payments, a large number of them are actually to business. So we see the ability for businesses to get their money in quicker and easier and cheaper makes them more efficient. And those efficiencies get passed on to the individuals. So the ability for corporates to take part in these rails, we believe, is a complete game changer for the industry. And I think those adoption figures that we've just spoken about, you're going to see them drastically change over the sort of next 6 months as businesses start to get involved.
Yeah, that's actually quite encouraging, and, you know, something that I personally hadn't thought about, you know, to say that the rate of adoption has mainly just come from consumers using it amongst themselves. But, you know, where do we go, you know, once the businesses come on board? You're probably multiplying current adoption, you know, by orders of magnitude, you know, just depending on how things happen. So from that point of view, then, you know, Antavi saying, one of the things that I know that as a consumer, I'm now wondering about is, but in this economy, instant payments have tended to be geared towards businesses. How much help, extra help, do businesses need? Because wherever you go, whether you're tapping your card or whether you are buying something, let's say on a website or in store, you're either giving a business direct cash or you're tapping and or you're swiping and they're getting their money, you know, at that time. And if you're doing it on an e-commerce transaction, you know, it's happening. The money is coming out of my account instantly, and I'm hoping that is being settled on the other side, you know, instantly. So now the question is, how much help? Maybe you can help to dispel, you know, for in our brains of, you know, what are the actual pain points that businesses have been failing, where something like a PayShop becomes, I guess, something that's attractive, you know, for them to say, actually, this is something that we are happy that Standard Bank is enabling for us.
Right. Okay. So just to explain in terms of that instant, especially to payments that actually go to corporates, it's not as instant as you think. So you doing that particular payment and money being debited onto your account does not necessarily mean that that funds or those transactions will actually automatically, instantly reflect in the corporate's account. We have multiple use cases that from a corporate perspective, this will actually create a benefit that they don't have today. For example, you do, or as an individual, you do a payment and you send a proof of payment. What our corporate clients have seen is that they've seen fraud happening with those proof of payment, where somebody has said, I've actually paid and I want that corporate to release the goods to me, only to find, and the funds are, because of the proof of payment, the corporate is trusting that and believing that the funds will actually reflect into their account, only to find that that was actually a fraudulent proof of payment, but they've released the goods. So they're sitting with that particular risk. What PayShop then does because of the incident, once you've paid as a consumer to that particular corporate, they actually get the money into the account instantly, and they're able to see it on their statement reflecting. So when they release those particular goods, they're comfortable to say, actually, that money has moved from your bank to their bank, and they're confident to say that they have the payment into their system. Another thing in terms of these cases that we've seen with our corporate is that there are certain services that you would want as a consumer. For example, if your MTN or your telephone bill, you didn't pay your monthly telephone bill and you've been blocked. And now you want to, because you have the funds, you want to pay instantly and you need them to unblock your services. As a consumer, you can then utilize this, and that particular mobile operator will then be confident because they will have the money into their account. They don't have to wait for 2 days for the funds to clear into the account for them to unblock the service. So they will utilize that once you've utilized PayShap to pay them to actually say, I have received an instantly unblock, and you will then continue to have the services. So from a corporate perspective is that instant receiving of cash, and also to have the confirmation and trust that the funds are actually into the account, and for them to then release or enable the services that they would want to offer to their clients.
Yeah, maybe just to add to that, there's also another dimension for businesses, which is around the cost of transactions. So currently, when you purchase from a retailer, it tends to be either a cash transaction or a card transaction. Now, you as the individual don't necessarily pay for that, but the corporate actually pays to get those banknotes processed. They pay an ad valorem, you know, a percentage of the transaction for a credit card transactions. And those costs go to the corporate, and they get passed on in the goods that you buy. So the idea is that when you can get more efficient in that processing mechanisms, those costs should be able to reduce prices to consumers.
Okay, I think it makes sense. You know, when you put it like that, it certainly dispels what I think a lot of people think is happening, you know, in the background, because you know, you're thinking, because I've paid XYZ business that they're receiving the money, almost on an instant basis. And I guess the other thing that maybe you can help us to understand, you know, keen to hear both views, you know, right now, is to say, why has it taken so long for us to maybe reach, you know, this point? And I guess to the point around the fact that it's still early days in terms of getting corporates, on board and fully into the system and all that. What type of timeline are we looking at, you know, where we can say, okay, fine, we've got a good rate of adoption from businesses, and now, you know, PayShap is something that's mainstream, you know, at least from a corporate point of view.
And maybe I could come in to answer how it has taken too long, and then Stuart, you can finish the other part. And this is just a bit of history of where this PayShap came from. So South Africa, as a country, we were proud to be one of the first countries from a financial services to actually deliver an urgent payment, which is what we know as RTC today. We're actually leading different countries with regards to delivering that. But we understood that as much as we had done this great thing within the financial services, it needed to be improved. And before we could improve that, we needed to craft in terms of what is our strategic intent? What do we want to achieve with this particular new, improved, faster payments? And this started with the modernization journey, which the SARB is so adopting, and the SARB is pushing the industry to modernize our legacy, our rail, how we do financial services. So we had to then take in and understand, before we can create a South African service, we needed to understand first what's been done in the world. And as the financial services, we took our time to actually go around the world and understand what other countries have done to develop this kind of services. How have they implemented? What were the learnings and what were the outcomes? What were the levers that we needed to do? And with that research, we then came back to say, what is applicable to our environment within South Africa? And that's what had led us to then come up with PayShap, because then we had to do the research, because we understood that if we just deliver for the sake of delivery, it's not going to deliver the impact or the value that we want. We want people to utilize this, but we also want to, as Stuart has said, decash, financial inclusion, and achieve some of the strategic objectives that the SARB was looking for. So it had to be right. And it had to, we had to make sure that it actually does add value before we could deliver anything. And that's the journey that we've walked through. So it's very informed. We've done the research. We understand what is needed. And that's why we are then rolling it out today in terms of phases for us to then deliver what we want to achieve with regards to this faster payments or PayShap. And Stu, you can take the second part.
Yeah, I think, and just maybe to add to that, is what we've seen in other developing markets where rapid payments have been rolled out, and to Mthabo Singh's point, typically Brazil, India are probably some of our favorite examples, is that over time, they have become the dominant payment mechanism. You know, so in India, they're doing, I think it was 15 billion transactions a month now. So the volumes are through the roof. Brazil, the same. The majority of low-value merchant transactions have all become on these instant payment rails. So we see the same trend happening. We see it becoming the dominant payment rail in South Africa over time. Now, to the second half of your question is when would that be? So I think when I talk to our corporates, we say that the journey's only just started, right? So the first year of this was around individuals. We just started the corporate journey in the last couple of months. So we've started enabling corporates to receive payments. We've got our new first-to-market platform that allows corporates to make payments to individuals. And we're just starting to see that traction come now. So we've got a large number of corporates who are experimenting, getting money in, and learning through this process. We do think there are a couple of other triggers that are really going to increase the adoption. And they're linked to two other pieces of functionality to be released later this year and early next year. The first one is a thing called request to pay, which is a message asking for a payment. Now, we see this being useful in the remote payments where somebody's, when you're not in a shop, when you want to pay remotely, to Mthabo Singh's, you know, somebody on the phone wanting to pay a bill, make a shipment, that kind of world. So we see that will start to come in. That's targeted September, October. We see that as a big trigger for adoption. We also see when we start getting QR codes, and I think the country is familiar with QR codes, scan a code, you get information, you make a payment. Mm-hmm. The new PayShap rails will enable you to really make those payments easily through that scanning process. That'll happen early next year. But I think the biggest adoption, and I think we'll see it through this year starting, is in the e-commerce space. It's in the small merchant space. It's in the, I always love Mthabo Singh's example. She's got a hairdresser who comes to her house every second Tuesday of the month, if I'm right. Yeah?
Once a month.
Anyway. Yeah. And now, as a small merchant, it's really important for her to get money immediately. Now, she's had the scenario where people don't have cash, I'll pay you later. Then she's got to phone people and nag for money. Now, once Mthabo Singh taught her, she's taking a PayShap payment immediately before she leaves. She's now started to do that with every single one of her clients because she gets money immediately. She doesn't have to, you know, nag people. And that's where I think the adoption is going to start really taking shape, is in these small merchants. Yeah.
And I just Sorry, I wanted to just add something quickly there before we go. Yeah. Is that the benefit is not only looking at the big corporates, it's across. So it doesn't matter how big or how small you are as a merchant or as an entity that is wanting to receive or make payments. That's where we're seeing the benefits. But also to say, from a South African perspective, the participation has been only to date limited to the banks. And we are also seeing the adoption being created where we have other stakeholders like your MNOs. So not everybody has a bank account within the South African context, but somebody has a wallet that is then backed by an MNOs. Once we then are enabling the MNOs to also participate, this will drive the adoption because then it will say that I'm able to utilize PayShap to pay somebody who doesn't have a bank account, but somebody who has a wallet, whether it's backed by an MNO or it's backed by any other entity. And that is when we'll start to see that financial inclusion as we have more stakeholders that are also non-banks participating in this. And that is something that we, from a Standard Bank perspective, we're saying we would want to encourage that because it fosters competition, but also it increases financial inclusion.
You know what? I'm actually glad that Mthabo Singh has gone down the road of the mobile operators. It was something that I was actually curious about myself. And this is not even just a South Africa specific issue. You know, when you see that there's, I think it's 1.2, 1.3 billion mobile money accounts, I think on the continent or something like that. It shows you the fact that this is where the market is. But you do need that integration with some of the more mainstream systems for you to actually drive some of that proper financial inclusion. You know, how do I, with a mobile wallet, be able to participate in certain activities? You know, pay for Netflix, for example. You know, I don't have a bank account, but how do I do something like that? And because Ntabi Seng brought it up, I may be gonna ask this particular question to Stuart to say, you know, indulge us, take us into the nitty gritties of payment rails and, you know, all of that stuff, you know, to say, in at least in the South African context, right? How is what needs to be in place, what needs to happen, you know, to enable what Ntabi Seng is talking about, where someone has a mobile wallet but still be able to send and receive value from someone who does have a bank account.
Yeah, I think, and I think we're talking about a very important sort of strategic positioning of the SARB. So the South African Reserve Bank is very focused on opening up payment rails. We use the word rails to talk about payments, but opening up payment rails to new competitors, to fintechs, to innovation, and to new technologies. And while it's overlaid, obviously, by the requirements from a governance, security, risk point of view. And I think it's, you know, the things that we look at is that how do we make sure we're not introducing risk into the system? You know, the risk of a real-time payment being used as a fraud mechanism becomes quite scary. So within these payment rails, especially PayShop, we've spent a lot of time, and this is often why these things take long and they're quite expensive. It's around literally real-time transaction monitoring of every transaction. You know, when I pay in Ntabi Seng 100 Rand, it goes through the same process as any other payment rail. In real time, I've got to confirm who Ntabi Seng is. I've got to make sure she's not fraudulent. Is it a real transaction? Are there any behavioral issues? Is she on a sanction screening watch list? So the core of these systems to make sure that these payment rails are efficient and really benefiting the economy, it's complicated. So that being said, the strategic intent is really to work with, and it is mobile operators and fintechs and what we call third-party payment providers, to enable them to offer some of these payment systems. You know, we can all go onto a telco's app and you can buy airtime and electricity and all of these value-added services. You can make payments, you can buy vouchers. All of those are payments. And all of those actually end up in the banking system. But what we've done is we work with these partners to enable them to come up with the real value add that clients are looking for. You know, if a client really wants to use a retailer's app to buy electricity, that's all fine. We just need to make sure that it's backed by a strong banking regulatory framework to prevent fraud and prevent, you know, consumers being exploited. So that's, you know, there's lots of technical way this happens, but, you know, we're running real-time checks on every single one of these payments. You know, every time you make a payment, we're going to make sure you're not on a terrorist watch list. It's a very, very technical, very, very complicated, but it's brand new technology. We're using a system called ISO, which is a very data-rich, secure payment rail, which is a modern standard that's been around the world. And it is literally being seen as a replacement rail for many of our legacy systems over time. But exciting times.
You know, when I think about everything that, you know, Stuart has just spoken about, one of the other things that I was quite curious about, and I think this is maybe a little bit of an extension, you know, to what we're talking about, is to say, for the smaller merchants, I can understand the what you call this, the hairdresser example that was given earlier on, you know, where you can easily, you know, send that money person to person and get that money to them, you know, as quickly as possible. But the thing I was then thinking about is for your medium to larger businesses, right? Let's say someone is in a retail sense or some other type of business where you're dealing with the high volumes, right? Is it necessarily that the mechanism to interact with corporates, you know, on using PayShop will necessarily be through the phone, or will I still be able to maybe swipe, tap my card or whatever it is, but maybe there's an integration with PayShop in the middle that just allows the business on the other side to get their money instantly. Yeah, I don't know how much of that you can you can help to shed light on. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe I'll take that one. I think so. It's a very insightful question. I think the success on how we as an industry solve that problem is going to be one of the key factors in adoption. And what we've seen around the rest of the world, in fact, we've seen it a lot in this country with fintechs around creative ways of triggering a payment. And some of it's automated, some of it's a tap, some of it's a swipe, some of it's biometric. There's a number of ways of doing a payment. I think, you know, if we talk about things like automatic payments, that's a great Uber example. You know, when you order an Uber, you worry about a couple of things. You know, you worry about, is the car safe? Is the driver license, the condition, is it healthy? Are you going to the right place? You might worry about the cost. But the last thing you worry about is the actual payment, because you don't even feel it. It becomes automatically. And I think that's the user experience that we're starting to see grow over time. And we'll see it as the fintechs start enabling these rails in the background. We'll see more and more of those types of transactions, whether it's a completely remote biometric transaction through a call center to your point. You know, if we need to start integrating this onto similar payment initiations as the card rails. How do I tap my phone at a supermarket and make a PayShop payment instead of a card payment? You know, at the, you know, some of the great challenges we find is that, you know, how do we tip people through an electronic payment instead of carrying cash? You know, as you know, our economy evolves, we decash more and more. It's how do you replace those small transactions, those easy transactions in a usable way? But we've seen it. I mean, I've seen in India, they're experimenting with voice payments. There's a number of really, really interesting things that are happening. We've seen in America, they had that construct of Amazon Go. It's, you know, you just walk in, it scans who you are, links it to your profile, take your goods and you walk out. And it's all electronic, no actual payment process. So I think it's very exciting times. And I think this is where we'll see lots and lots of innovation happening around those payment mechanisms, just using this as a settlement rail, basically.
Yeah, most certainly. And Tabi, saying on this one, you know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier on, I think right at the beginning, and it's something that Stuart has just spoken about, is this fight against cash. I have spoken to banks and enough fintechs to understand that that is the common, I don't know if I can call it the common enemy, but cash is the thing that everyone is, you know, fighting against. And despite the fact that, you know, in certain rungs of society, there's almost no cash being used, the truth of the matter is, in the majority of the economy, you know, cash is still what you call this, accounting for over 50% of payments that are being made, you know, in the country. How much closer does PayShop bring us, you know, to, you know, that cashless society, that cashless dream? My understanding of the problem is that it's transactions, the small transactions that Stuart is talking about, my understanding is that it's anything below 50 Rand is where the real tussle in the industry is going on.
Yes. And you're so correct. I mean, I think Stuart did mention it earlier to say some of the objective from a SAP perspective was to utilize this new rail as a service or an alternative that's closely that can compete with cash. What we do know is that cash will always be there. There are use cases that rely on cash and would not be digitized. But with regards to this particular rail or PayShop, is that we are seeing it solve what we couldn't solve, especially on a card environment. And what do I mean by that? When you want to disseminate cash, you need to solve both the originator, which is the person who's paying, as well as the receiver. What we've seen within the card world is that you will issue cards, but I get to Protea Glen and I want to buy certain things at shops, they don't have a card machine because of the cost to it. So they cannot accept. As much as I have cash and I have money in my card and I'm digital, but the person who's actually accepting that particular payment is not able to then receive my card or process the payment through the card because of the cost, first of all, in terms of offering that. What we see PayShap actually doing is that from a receiving, it solves both the receiving as well as the originator. From a receiving side, what my hairdress, and taking the hairdress example, what she needed to do was just to register a proxy with her bank, and that enabled her to receive that. Even if she didn't register a proxy, she could have just given me an account and I was able to then transact and give her money digitally. So what PayShap does is that it makes it easier, but it also is cost effective for somebody to receive digital payments. Instead of us saying that we've issued you, but there's that disconnection between the receiver and the originator. So that's what we've seen. But also within the retail space, and this is the customer journey that Stuart was talking to, for us to see that adoption, especially in the big retailers, where we see most cash, because from an individual, when I have cash, there's no cost to me. I don't have any cost. 100 rand is 100 rand. And there are no fees that now I have it in my bank account when I want to spend. It's now 99 rent. The rent has gone for fees. What from a PayShap perspective we're trying to achieve, and the objective from a regulator is to say the same experience that somebody as a consumer you perceive with cash, to say 100 rand will be 100 rand, make it the same. And it's something that in Brazil they've actually done well, where they've actually made it free. To say if you actually processing a payment with this particular rail, there's no cost to you. From a South African perspective, we're still far from that. We still need to then adopt and get to that point. But with regards to the foundation and the rails, we've enabled that particular capability to enable the originator and the receiver. But also, we still need to do a lot of work to then do the customer journey to say, when you're in the retailer, how do you then pay? And how is it easy for me and convenient for me to actually want to pay with PayShap instead of taking out my card or taking out my cash? And that is something that as an industry, as we mature in this, we'll then get to that perfect, and with partnership from a fintech perspective, get to a perfect user journey from a client perspective. But the foundation and the rails are there for us to then create that user journey and enable those and then see this competing with cash.
You know, one of the things that's most interesting about case studies is the fact that the implementation of a case study within a different environment tends to come with a different set of problems that need to be solved for, right? If I use the India example that has been used a couple of times here, I often talk about the fact that I was in India last year and I got to see in person the advancement that the unified payments interface has been able to enable, you know, through retailers, fintech, startups. It's actually quite deep. But one of the things that I understand about the UPI is that that was almost a decade-long process that began with the simple act of, okay, we want everyone in the country to have a bank account, but before we can enable a bank account, we must at least make sure that every person in the country has an ID. All right, cool. Let's solve for the ID, and then that will help us to do the UPI. But in making all of that happen, government takes on a big cost to set that system up. But in the South African context, as much as the Reserve Bank has been leading this process, at least to my understanding, it's the banks that have taken on, you know, that cost. So maybe you could talk to us about that tension of delivering services that are close to cash, but in a realistic business sense, we do need to account for the fact that as banks, you guys still need to recoup the investment that you guys have put into the system. And Tabi Seng, I'll start with you here.
Okay. No, thanks for that. I mean, you are so right. The implementation of this from in India, it was government-led. So a government had an issue that they needed, a social issue that they needed to solve, and they led the implementation. And some of the success that we see with India is with regards to that government-led. from a South African perspective, how it then came in is that we then, as the bank said, we would then lead this implementation. We don't, because a directive, it restricts us in terms of saying we'll just do the bare minimum. But with the industry leading is to give comfort to our regulator that we can lead certain initiatives that will benefit the country. With that being said, is that actually for us to implement this, it meant that we could reduce some of the costs that we see, especially with cash. So from a consumer perspective, you're not carrying those costs. We are carrying those costs. So it was in our best interest from a bank or financial sector for us to enable this and for us to then take a view that in terms of how we price, and this is in a competition space, or how you price, is that it's we need to make it affordable for us to generate utilization, for us to remove some of the transactions that don't necessarily belong in cash, but they're being in cash because of the lack of services that we provide, to then move them into this. But it also to say that we need to then reduce those cost overhead that we are seeing with cash that we can then migrate into digital transaction. But understanding that as much as we are investing in this, this is part of a modernization journey, as I've said. This is the first, one of the steps that we've taken from a payments perspective. But understanding that we need to recoup, and it might not be the first year where we recoup the cost, but we need to make it affordable so that we can then create adoption and attract other use cases that are not there that would exist in this particular environment. So it was understanding that most of the cost is with us, but also how do we recoup within a reasonable, parameters for us not to then be out of pocket or making a loss while we're trying to solve some other issues. So it was striking that balance. And I guess as the industry, as the bank, we have different, we have different objectives in terms of our revenue strategies. And each bank will then have its own flavor in terms of what they want to achieve with their clients. But we are, committed to making it affordable so that we can then create adoption and move those use cases that are in cash to come into the digital transactions.
It is an interesting balance that needs to be struck, and a tough one, if I'm going to be 100% honest. You know, if I was one of the banks, it's quite a deep one. You know, you're trying to make people use this thing, but you're trying to recoup costs, and you're also competing, you know, on the pricing element. It's quite something. So maybe in that regard, maybe we can give Stuart the last word on this discussion, just to get a sense of what the engagements are like with other industry players, because through this discussion, it's quite clear that at least at Standard Bank, there's been quite, deep discussions with the Reserve Bank. But at least with your compatriot banks, what's the level of discourse like? You're competing, but you're also, this is still an association. This is an industry-wide effort, to try and solve for all of these issues.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. I think there's an industry dynamic, and Ntebe Seng leads a lot of this from our side. And it's around how do you make sure a single system works across, currently, 14 banks, and it's going to grow up in a number of banks. How do they all end up doing the same transactions through the same switch, and how does it all work? Those relationships are complicated. I think all the banks support each other in the testing and the learning and making it more efficient. And I think that's an ongoing role that banks play in the industry. And then on the other side, it's starting to become really exciting and frankly competitive. You know, the ability to go out and work with clients and solving real client problems, as we're seeing lots of strategies come up from the different corporate banks. And the corporate banks are really starting to compete. They're competing on innovation. They're competing on price. They're competing on client experience, client solutioning, and a number of other aspects. So to me, that's a really exciting aspect. You know, the collaboration on the core rails, but it does really enable the growth of competition in the industry. And competition is a good thing for all of us. You know, we're all competing. And that's what really benefits the economy. That's what drives price down over time. That's what drives growth in volume. And that's what drives, bringing more individuals into the banking system. So competition is really, really starting to become dynamic. And yeah, lots of exciting times ahead, I think, over the next year or so.
No, most certainly. And that's where, you know, we land today's discussion. It has been a really great one, understanding the world of rapid payments in South Africa, more specifically, you know, around PayShap. As we said at the beginning, PayShap, it allows you to send and receive money, you know, on the basis of a, you know, cell phone or a mobile number. And that has been used at least in the first instance or the first phase, you know, on a consumer level since its launch in March 2023. And one of the things that the team from Standard Bank is highlighting, this is something that, you know, Stuart highlighted at the beginning, you know, to say that the onboarding of businesses is going to help to increase adoption in such a huge and major way, because whatever adoption we're seeing now has mainly come from, you know, consumers, and that has already been, that's already been big. But a lot of, you know, transaction takers and a lot of transaction disseminators are businesses, you know, in the country. And the real adoption, we are going to see how it goes. It's still early days. But, you know, that's where things, you know, have been going. Thabiseng just giving us some insight into some of the mechanisms, you know, behind the scenes, you know, simply to say that in the current environment, yes, money feels like it's been taken out of your account. But, you know, in the background, it doesn't necessarily mean that it goes, you know, to that business, you know, and in that instance, there's still a lot of work in the background. And things like PayShap are trying to solve, you know, for a lot of those issues. She was also making us aware of, you know, some of the issues that they are trying to solve for, you know, some of the major players, you know, the relationships with the, between the different banks, and then that fight for cash. You know, they do accept that cash will always have a place, but at least more digital payments and digital banking point of view, it's how do we reduce the amount of cash in the system? How do we give people the same experience and feeling of cash and the cost of cash and the convenience of cash, you know, in a digital way? And so the things that people can enable are going to be a huge thing. The ability to enable wallets or people that don't have accounts to be able to send and receive value, that is a big part, you know, of the issue. Over time, we also hope to see some type of, at least for myself, to see some type of cross-border integration as well, you know, in some of, you know, in some of these things. And then also just giving us some insight into how other countries have been making use of similar systems and how they've been solving for it. And, you know, some of the idiosyncrasies around government-led approaches versus private sector, you know, led approaches, and the tension that goes from trying to drive financial inclusion in the country as a banking system versus, you know, in other countries like India, where the government has taken it upon themselves and the burden that is placed on the sector to make all of that happen. So that's been it. We were in discussion with Thabiseng Mohale as well as Stuart McDermott, who are both, you know, from Standard Bank, specifically corporate and investment banking, giving us some insight into how they're working to bring more, you know, of the corporates, businesses and merchants onto the PayShap system. Thabiseng, Stuart, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.